The global pandemic changed the way teachers engage with learning technologies.
In this podcast, we try to filter out the clutter and noise around technology tools
and focus on the essential questions of pedagogy that drive meaningful learning experiences.
You're joining Alicia Gallegos-Butters, Michan Hofter-Thompson, and Pamela Raven for our podcast series,
EdTech. If you didn't know,
now you know.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. We are on chapter 6 today, and we are going over conditions that increase the probability of engagement, expectation, responsibility, employment, approximation, and response. We will be tying this into our EdTech lives. I am Alicia Gallegos-Butters. With me today is Pamela Raven and Michan Hofter. When I first started reading this chapter, it really wanted us to think of our classrooms and our schools at like this ecosystem, this biodome. And it asked us, what would we choose to bring into our learning setting because of its inherent value to learning? And I loved that question, and it really got me thinking of when I was in the classroom, what do I like to bring in? And it also made me think of this past year and a half with COVID, and we were doing a lot of remote teaching, and what did I like bringing in to my virtual classrooms as well? How did I do that? So I thought this was a really great way to start this chapter.
I thought of that in terms of resources that are tangible. But then there's sort of those other intangible things that go along with what do you value as an educator? I want to bring joy into my classroom. I want to bring conversation and deep learning. And I really want kids to have an innate curiosity for what they're doing, because I believe that they come to us with that. And so when I think of what would I bring into my classroom, it's what's going to help them to get to those kinds of levels of thinking or curiosity. What helps to facilitate all of that? And that's where I thought technology actually would play a crucial role. And so for me, that tangible object would have to be something that is that portal to so many resources that are outside of your classroom, to so many resources that are brand new and updated, and you're not learning about a koala from a book that was published in 1962.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that, because if we're going with that koala analogy, you're not learning about a koala from a book in 62. You could ask students to look at a live cam at a zoo, at a natural habitat of a koala, and see what they're doing. It allows also that while students are viewing that, they can have these conversations. Sometimes I do think that even though students are in a virtual environment, for those students who are shy or who maybe don't want to engage as much, it gives them that opportunity to talk without having to look somebody in the eye, or all of those social norms that maybe some of our students don't really feel comfortable with. And so they could be watching the koala and then interacting with their student peers by typing in the chat, or by giving a thumbs up, or even by sharing a Google document and all the students answering it at the same time, writing what they're noticing. That koala eats a lot of eucalyptus leaves. Oh, that koala moves at a very slow pace.
Exactly. It's a lot harder to be curious about a koala that's in a picture versus something that's actually moving around in its semi-natural environment if it's at the zoo, or it's a natural environment if you're a live cam that's out in Australia in the outback somewhere.
Exactly. And I think about what you just said, you want to bring joy to your class. Well, I can think of nothing more than watching a koala interact. Actually, I can think of something more. If it were a red panda, that would be even better. And that would bring joy to a group of students.
Well, and one of the things that came up in the chapter that's connected to what you all are talking about is this idea that there are expectations for kids to have practice with whatever it is you want them to be learning, what's been demonstrated. This idea of lots of opportunity to engage with problems and activities that help them to develop I think they used employment. The kids take on the ownership of their own learning. Here's an opportunity that you're just talking about in terms of the koala, whether it's questions that have been developed by the class that they want to answer, or something that's been posed by the teacher, you know, maybe a larger question, an essential question for a unit or something like that. And kids get the opportunity to interact with authentic experiences, right? So that they're meaningful. Like you said, Alicia, you'd rather look at red pandas than koalas because that's your interest. So the teacher knowing what the interests are of the students and really having that great, strong relationship with the kids then helps them to develop these opportunities for this chance for learners to employ the skills and knowledge that you're teaching them.
Yeah, and the technology allows for you to have that differentiation, right? Because it's a lot harder to bring kids to a zoo, split them up into groups and have everyone go for the real animal that they want to investigate. But with the animal cams, you have a lot more ability to individualize, right?
And if you have different cameras, different TVs, systems in your classroom, or even just kids around their own computers, could then pull up the animal cam that's of interest to them in a small group or something like that.
And you can say that for videos, textbooks, so much resources that are available. I think I heard that when you were thinking of the wording, I once heard someone in an article talk about your goal is for students to be autonomous drivers of their own education. And I think that that really falls into that expectation and responsibility piece that they discuss, because the way that, to me, expectation is, that's our own, what we bring to the table, how we present students' abilities to be able to do something. Sometimes I think there is demonstration. I know that that is a big part of learning, but then I think there's that time when they need to be employing, the employment aspect of it. Technology to me is a framework and support that gives students tools and the scaffolding that they need to be independent, because they can add the scaffolding in when they need it and that they make that choice. They can use it if they need it and they can ignore it if they don't need it. And I think things like recording mini lessons can be very timely to help a student when they need something. Or just knowing, most kids go to Google these days and they look it up on YouTube. I had to become an immediate specialist for my daughter the other night to help her with a recombinant DNA gel phoresis assignment that she had to do. I knew nothing about that. I went to YouTube and I found so many videos on it, and she and I looked at them together. We were able to break it down into its parts and really understand what's going on at every different level of that little mini assignment that she had. So the scaffolding is out there already, and we just need kids to see that it exists. But I think teachers can bring it in. It gives immediate feedback through it. And we can even give asynchronous feedback through technology. And all of that helps kids be able to work independently and discover what they need when they need it. And I think that that's important.
Yeah, and I do like that technology gives students that really safe space to do that. I don't know how many teachers out there have experienced students who probably were a lot like me, especially back in the day when you would use pencils and then you had that weird paper that was, when you would erase on it, it would leave the big mark. And I was always so afraid to make a mistake because I'd have to erase it and then it would take some of my paper and then it would put a hole in my paper and all of that. Nowadays with technology, you don't have that fear. Students can make the mistakes and they can move on from it. And it doesn't leave that residue, which is both emotional residue, but it's a physical residue as well on the paper. And I love that technology allows students to do that. And it does employ that much more independence in students. So you could ask students to go research what their favorite animal is and then find a webcam and watch it. And then they can share that document about why this is my favorite animal. I think there's lots of ways to get students involved via technology. And it ultimately always comes down to what are your expectations for your students as a teacher and as a parent and as a learner. And have you embedded in your students that your expectations are that they will learn, they will edit, they will research, they will do this, and therefore they do.
And sometimes I think the expectation is that you will struggle, that learning is not always easy, but there's a pathway to get there that you can attain. Because sometimes you'll hear kids say, I'm not a math person. Or in our line of work, we hear teachers say, I'm not a technology person. And what we explain to them is, you can be. There's a pathway to get from where you are to where you need to be. Let us help you get there.
That's so interesting because I'm teaching right now and my students saw final projects of classes years past. And so they're looking at there and they're like, there's so much work, it's so hard. And I have to tell my students, you will do this because I know you will. Trust the process. And I think that getting students to trust a process and to really understand that they're capable and the expectation is that they will is really important to do. And this chapter talks about that.
And talked about the approximations that they do through that process, right? We've gotten to the point where we forget or we overlook those approximations and the celebrations of approximations. Anytime a learner is approximating, yay, fantastic. They're trying it on. They're taking that learning on themselves and trying to figure it out. And I think that the role of a teacher has really shifted from what it used to be, certainly from when I started teaching, where it was a lot of worksheets. It was a lot. There wasn't a whole lot of this looking at approximations and celebrating when a kid attempted something and then talking to them about it, which shifts our role to more of a guide versus somebody who has all the answers. As teachers, if we're doing more of the shifting and giving students more choice, more space to be the owners of their learning, then they can choose which tool, which tech tool or non-tech tool that they want to use to show their learning, to show where they're at in their process and in their journey. I think as kids get older, we're less likely to celebrate those approximations. We assume that what we're teaching them and modeling for them, they take on quicker, and kids don't. They need that time with opportunities to play with it.
I think sometimes the mismatch comes, and they said this in the book, it was around page 87, and I wrote some notes on it. I'm not going to quote it exactly, but basically that there's this overwhelming sense of I have to get my students to the finish line by the end of the year. And so we fall into the trap of efficiency. And in the name of efficiency, the question was, are we eliminating too many moments for learning? You know, we make decisions for students that they're perfectly capable of making on their own. And I think their technology gives us so many modes for expressing your knowledge that we can give kids options, like you were saying, and we need to trust that they'll be able to do them. A lot of times teachers get bogged down with the technology and, oh, I can't put Flipgrid on there because I don't know how to do it. Or, oh, we can't have a podcast or create a song or whatever because I don't know how to do it. When they could actually have that as an option, knowing that their kids probably do at this point in time know how to do it or know somebody who knows how to do it. And if a child is really interested taking that on, they're going to figure it out. They're going to go to YouTube. They're going to ask their older brother or sister. If they're super excited about showing knowledge in a certain way, they will take that on. And I think it's options. Sometimes it's not necessarily free range, but that can be a real deciding factor for a student. Maybe I have to write an essay because that's the learning goal coming down from the state. But then what's another way that I can show that knowledge around the revolution that I just learned in my own way so that I have something to look forward to? I have that joy. I understand the essay process. I'm going to do approximations on that because I'm still learning it. But I really love film. And I think I could show this one aspect of American Revolution or whatever in a film version. And it would be really fun to do. So I think we need to give students those opportunities.
Right. And then a big key would be what kind of feedback are you getting? Exactly. I think they call it response in the chapter, but what kind of feedback are you getting from your peers, your teacher, et cetera? That response piece, that feedback is really, really important as well along your journey. I think one of the things that technology makes a whole lot easier is helping develop opportunities for peers to give feedback on student projects and whatever it is that students or the learner is creating, right? To show their learning. And oftentimes we think, oh, it takes too much time, but we can give so much more opportunity in shared docs, in shared slides, in Flipgrid, where kids can give almost immediate feedback. And so that timeliness of it is really important as well.
Yeah, I think technology offers new options for that feedback, cross-age tutoring that may not have happened before because some students were in a high school and some students were in an elementary school. But now you might be able to partner fifth graders up with ninth graders to get fun feedback. You know, I'm saying fun because it's a ninth grader talking to me and giving me feedback about my essay. I might hear from my parents, I might hear from my teacher, I could even hear from my friends and really not take in what they're saying, but maybe a ninth grader is the person that will speak to me. You have the ability to get get subject matter experts to come in. So if you're studying that koala, maybe your teacher can wrangle having the local veterinarian from the zoo meet online with you. And that's a different type of feedback. It's not a super micro feedback on an essay, but it is feedback on what you're researching and what you're doing and what you're thinking. And I think that technology has that way of breaking down walls, breaking down that biome, if we think of it that way, that we never had the opportunities to do 20 years ago. That gives students opportunity to immerse themselves in the learning in a real deep and interesting way. Alicia, we were talking earlier about approximations and how it's kind of interesting what VR might have, and you had some interesting things to say about it.
I think that technology has really opened up the door for students to be able to make approximations again in that safe zone. And the expectation is that they will be able to do this, and at times they'll fail and at times they'll succeed, but they're not going to be hurting anyone or anything if they do it this way. And I think of the classes that I took, again, like biology classes where we were dissecting frogs. If that could be something done in online and virtual reality where nobody is getting hurt, it doesn't matter if you slice the eyeball incorrectly, you could always try again. I think that that's what makes technology really a benefit to this chapter.
It's like, what better feedback is there than, you know, killing your patient or the world exploding because you mixed your chemicals wrong? I don't know.
Exactly. Or you're learning to fly a plane or drive a car or any of those things that this gives you a really safe environment that you can do these things and not cause damage.
Yeah, and not cause high expenses. In the simulation with the gelphoresis, you know, that's a lot of chemicals. That's a lot of expensive equipment and a lot of solutions and things that had to be created. I can't imagine what that would really cost in a classroom. And yet she got a pretty good approximation of how that whole process works and what it looks like through an online program. It was pretty amazing.
Awesome.
I think when it comes to all of that expectation, responsibility, employment, approximation, and response, technology is such a backbone that can help teachers to widen their sphere of influence for their students in terms of resources, in terms of feedback, that if you're bringing anything into that little educational biome, I really think you need to consider technology when you're thinking about what's really important in your educational zone.
Sounds about right to me, Pam.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. And it was, as usual, a joy to work on this with you.
If you'd like to join us for future podcasts or catch up on previous episodes, you can go to our podcast website. The short link for that is bit.ly/edtechnow. So that's bit.ly/edtechnow, all lowercase letters. Or you can check us out at edtech.innovatesd.org. See you soon!